Welcome to episode 450 of Troubadours and Raconteurs with yours truly, E.W. Conundrum Demure. On this week's episode, we have a very special treat. Our associate producer, Dr. Michael Pavese, will be speaking with us about the great Stephen Sondheim. We will delve into the relationship between Sondheim and Oscar Hammerstein. Dr. Pavese will share a short history of American musical theater. We discuss Sondheim's tendency to create a psychological depth for his characters, and how a common theme is people trying to figure themselves out in his work, and how Mr. Sondheim was open to changes right up to his death just a few weeks ago in his 90s, and how he was generous with his time. A grand conversation with our associate producer, Dr. Michael Pavese, on the great Stephen Sondheim. We have an EW essay titled A Thrill, and Dr. Pavese reads, as recommended by Stephen Sondheim, a love letter to a playwright by Phyllis McKinley. And we have an EW poem called The Lute. All of this, of course, will be surrounded, imbued, infused with the wonderful energy of several great tunes, all Sondheim tunes, all chosen by our associate producer and his son, Nick, for this program. So, let's get to it. Episode 450 of Troubadours and Raconteurs.
Hit it, Daddy-O.
Don't feel nervous.
Nothing's gonna harm you, not while I'm around. Nothing's gonna harm you, no sir, not while I'm around. Demons are prowling everywhere nowadays. I'll send them howling, I don't care, I got ways. No one's gonna hurt you, no one's gonna dare. Others can desert you, not to worry, whistle, I'll be there. Demons will charm you with a smile for a while, but in time, nothing can harm you, not while I.
a thrill. The weather outside is frightful, yet the sharks and jets are delightful. Let it snow, let it snow, on with the show. Not Sondheim for sure, but I am E.W. Conundrum Demure. The American Songbook, cross-pollinating with Broadway theater, is a speed for her that fits just so, as we do-si-do around the small wooden kitchen table, in between work, TV, and stockpiling the bills. Like that song from Journey, everyone wants a thrill. And some frills, too. He was raised in Manhattan, and what a mighty fine man he so happened to become. Could have ended up another bum, roaming the streets on the Bowery, in Hell's Kitchen, an aimless artistic soul. Any one of us has that sort of chance, but not him. But for Oscar to start the boy with ways to cultivate his talent and joy, he might have ended up a handsy regular at small, smoky cabaret shows, waiting in the back for some physical contact and a plastic bag of tinted yellow God's Country smack, held tightly together with a used, cracking, doubled-up rubber band. Though not him, not this man. Instead, he wrote many stories in song and embraced humanity, loving and strong, surely resonating for generations in our country's heart and head. Adieu to you from us presumptuous, on behalf of the unsuspecting throng.
Here's to us.
Who's like us?
Damn few.
Hey, old friend, are you okay? Old friend, what do you say? Old friend, are we or are we unique? Time goes by, everything else keeps changing. You and I, we get continued next week. Most friends fade, or they don't make the grade. New ones are quickly made, and in a pinch, sure, they'll do. But us, old friend, what's to discuss? Old friend, here's to us. Who's like us? Damn few.
So, old friend, fill me in slow. Old friend, start from hello. Old friend, I want the when, where, and how. Old friends do tend to become old habit. Never knew how much I missed you till now.
Most friends fade, or they don't make the grade. New ones are quickly made, some of them worth something too. But us, old friends, what's to discuss? Old friends,
tell you something. Good friends point out your lies, whereas old friends live and let live.
Good friends like and advise, whereas old friends love and forgive.
And old friends let you go your own way.
Help you find your own way.
Let you off when you're wrong.
If you're wrong.
When you're wrong.
Right or wrong, the point is old friends shouldn't care.
you're wrong.
When you're wrong.
The thing is, old friends do leave their brands on you, but old friends shouldn't compete.
Old friends don't make demands on you.
Should make demands on you.
Well, don't make demands you can't meet.
Well, what's the point of demands you can meet?
Well, there's a time for demands, whether you meet them or not.
You can ride out in the first 1 minute. The one corner's on the other side, there's only one on the hallway.
Hey, old friends, how do we stay? Old friends, who is to say? Old friends, how an old friendship survives. One day Chum's having a laugh a minute. One day comes and they're a part of your lives. New friends pour through the revolving door. Maybe there's one that's more. If you find one, that'll do. But us old friends, what's to discuss, old friends? Here's to us, who's like us. Two old friends, fewer won't do. Old friends, gotta have two old friends helping you balance along.
One upbraids you for your faults and fancies.
One persuades you
that the other one's wrong.
Most friends fade, or they don't make the grade. New ones are quickly made perfect as long as they're new. But us old friends, what's to discuss, old friends? Here's to us, who's like us? Damn few.
Hello, is this Dr. Michael Pavese?
It is.
That's
EW?
It is EW Conundrum. I am so happy to have you participate in a conversation with us on our show, Michael. I mean, Michael's our associate producer for years here on Troubadours and Rock On Tours. I'm sure you've heard his voice with some of the essays he's written and read, and plays as well. He is here today to talk with us about a particular subject, Stephen Sondheim. And Michael is an essayist, a playwright, a professor, a middle school literature teacher, writing teacher, among other things. And again, our associate producer, it's so nice to be able to talk with you. So you wanted to talk about the contributions to the artistic culture in Western civilization of Stephen Sondheim versus Drake, I think it was. Or was it, or Katy Perry? I'm not sure.
It might have been, or Taylor Swift. I'm a major Swiftie. Yeah, I am. In addition to being, you know, a Sondheim.
That's Swift. Well, Swiftie sounds about right.
My kids are big Taylor Swift fans, and there's a 2 degree, let's see, 2 degree separation between Taylor Swift and Sondheim, because she was dating Jake Gyllenhaal, and there's a song that she wrote about the breakup, and there's a video, like a 6 minute video about it, and Jake Gyllenhaal played George in Sunday in the Park with George.
Ah, yeah. How'd he do?
So, he was terrific. He was terrific. And the finishing the hat, his version is very good of finishing the hat. It's excellent. Yeah, he was terrific. But thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, well, you're part of the show. It's nice to have you in this capacity. I know there are several different directions you'd like to go to. I mean, pretty much you've produced this whole episode, in terms of the music that we're going to hear,
throughout, and really what we're going to talk about. So, thank you. And it's important. It's important to talk about Stephen Sondheim, I think, because he is one of the greats, isn't he? I mean, where does he come from, first of all? Where is he out of? Is he like from Idaho, or is he from Louisiana?
No, he's a classic New Yorker, upper West Side. Where is it, East Side? Upper East Side New Yorker, I think. And his father's a manufacturer. He grew up in pretty affluent conditions. And so he's a classic New Yorker. And then do you want me to give you a little of his background?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Well, for all those Sondheim fans out there who are listening, you're going to know this and probably correct me in the Facebook groups we have.
You'll be canceled.
I know. I couldn't live without them. Couldn't live without finishing the hat. Good thing going. But he was raised in New York, but his mother, who he had a very, very tense and strange and sad relationship with, divorced his father when he was 10, and they had a house in Doylestown, Pennsylvania.
Oh, wow.
And his mother was kind of a celebrity hunter. So Oscar Hammerstein lived like 3 miles away, and he had a son who was roughly Sondheim's age. So through his mother, he had the connection with Oscar Hammerstein, and he became part of the family, basically. Oscar Hammerstein became his mentor and his teacher and sort of like a second father.
Well, for those who don't know the whole world of the American Songbook of Broadway, right. Who's Oscar Hammerstein?
Excellent question, EW. Oscar Hammerstein was half of Rodgers and Hammerstein, who wrote Oklahoma and Carousel and The Sound of Music and The King and I. So he was a major fan. And he had been writing lyrics since the 20s. He wrote Showboat with Jerome Kern. This would be in the 40s when Hammerstein was working with Richard Rodgers and creating these great musicals. So he was a master lyricist and book writer. So for Sondheim to meet him, I don't want to use the word miracle, but it's an amazing coincidence. You know? And he said repeatedly that he wanted to be a songwriter because Oscar was, and that if Oscar was a geologist, he probably would have become a geologist.
And so was he like a father figure?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. He would say in interviews that basically Oscar saved his life, because of he had such a bad relationship with his mother, and he was very unhappy child. So Oscar taught him songwriting, and he was naturally gifted musician and composer and songwriter. And so one day he wrote a musical, and Sondheim wrote a musical, and he thought it was great. And he was like 15 or 16, I think, something like that. And he brought it to Oscar and said, "Tell me what you think about it." And Oscar said, "Well, do you want me to, be honest and, actually have an effect?" And he said, "Yep." And he said, "Well, it's the worst thing I've ever read."
Oh, wow.
But what he did that afternoon, he took him through and explained everything about the show and what he could have done and what he should have done and what was wrong with it. And Sondheim said he learned more in 3 hours with Oscar than he's had, the rest of his life about songwriting. And then Oscar gave him some work to do. He said, you want to become, a songwriter, you want to write musicals. So he gave him, I think, 4 things to write. He told him to adapt a show that was good in terms of a musical, adapt a show that he didn't think was so good, and then write an original. I can't remember the fourth one. So he wrote these shows, and in writing the shows, he became himself. He was, his son was on the Colbert Show recently, and he told this anecdote, and Oscar said, you know, you're a really talented songwriter, but, you know, you're writing like me instead of you, you know?
Yeah.
And Sondheim spent the next, when he was working on the show, basically becoming himself in terms of, you know, the music and the lyrics and the sensibility.
And he was, again, he was a teenager when this was happening.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he was, and then he went to Williams College in Williamstown, my my summer stomping grounds.
That's renowned for its theater, summer theater.
Well, at the time, it was before they started the theater, but it was a really good, it still is, you know, a really good small liberal arts school with a great music program, and they had a theater program. So he wrote shows for at Williams, and then by 25, he wrote a show that didn't go anywhere. The producer died. But then at 25, he wrote West Side Story.
Wow.
With Leonard Bernstein and Arthur Barnes. And then he wrote Gypsy. And then he began writing his own shows, you know, writing the music and lyrics. He started off as a lyricist for West Side Story, which, by the way, the movie of the new version by Steven Spielberg and Tony Kushner, it opens today. Oh, no, it opens tomorrow. It opens tomorrow.
From the day we're talking. We're talking on
December. Right, yeah. we're talking
December 9th, so you're saying it opens up December 10th.
Yeah.
Just
by the time it airs, it'll be in the theaters.
It'll be in theaters, right. And are you getting like residuals by mentioning it?
I wish. There's a great story about Leonard Bernstein started writing the lyrics to West Side Story, and then they hired Sondheim, and then eventually Sondheim really wrote all the lyrics. So for a while they were getting credit for the lyrics, you know. And Bernstein said before that opens, you know, you should really get solo credit, you know, and I'll give you the royalties, you know, the half of the royalties that I would get. And Sondheim said, no, the credit is enough. And he said he wished someone had like stuffed his mouth at that moment, you know, because that would be, you know, from, you know, it was a huge hit and the soundtrack was big, you know, that would be, I don't know, I guess millions of dollars.
Right, right. And yeah. I mean, he was well off anyhow, but still, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, but it's a great story. He was an amazing storyteller, and
And he just passed, you know, recently, within the last few weeks, and he was in his 90s, still yeah, working.
He's still working. He was still active, and he's become so much of a recently part of the culture. I mean, he's showing up in different TV shows and movies, like his music is. And two of his shows are being revived. He was 91 and he died, I think the day after Thanksgiving.
Right.
And he was active up until then. He had gone to the opening of Assassins at Classic Stage Company, and he was at the first preview of Company, which opens fairly soon, maybe this week or next week.
And these are his shows too.
And these are his shows. These are revivals of his shows. Company, he wrote in 1970, and that's a groundbreaking musical. And Assassins, I think it's from 1990. He was at the preview of Company, and he was working on a new musical.
That's amazing.
Active right up until he died. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great way to be. And you know, people that hear Sondheim, obviously he's a well-known name, even though people might not know exactly what he's all about. People that hear it, I mean, why is he so significant? You know, I mean, yeah, he's some guy that wrote words, for shows, you know, and, or came up with his own shows. Why are his shows so great? Why is his work so important? Why is he, you know, a goat, the goat?
Yeah. Goat. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. They might know his, they might know his name vaguely, you know, if they're not into, if they're not into theater, you know, but they won't know, him. But you know, do you mind if I give you like a short history of the American musical theater?
No, go ahead. I'd love it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, and again, this is, you know, in my circles, we all know this, right?
Right.
But,
but your circles are small.
Right. That's right. Yeah, they just fit around me. That's my circle. Yeah.
A circumference of about 2 feet.
Yeah. Well, so back in the 20s and 30s, the beginnings of American musical theater, you know, there wasn't necessarily a connection between the songs and the book. The book is the story and the libretto. So the musicals were kind of mostly kind of light, and they're comedies, and they have a flimsy plot, or they have a star, and they have a bunch of songs that may or may not have anything to do with the story. You know, and that would be like Cole Porter musicals and George Gershwin and Irving Berlin. And then with Hammerstein, at first with Showboat, and then definitely later on with Richard Rodgers, after Rodgers wrote these kind of musicals, these early musicals with Lawrence Hart, you know, My Funny Valentine, and My Romance. And after Hart died, he teamed up with Hammerstein, and Rodgers and Hammerstein kind of created a new musical. Oklahoma is a groundbreaking musical, and that the book is integrated with the music and the lyrics and the song. So the songs move the story along. And so they had enormous influence on musicals from the 40s up until the 60s. And then Sondheim, who's kind of the heir to Hammerstein, brings it a step further in terms of integrating the subject matter you cover and integrating the music and the book and the lyrics, and also adding this kind of a maturity or a sophistication and a depth, a psychological depth to the characters. And what he learned, one of the things he learned from Oscar, is to write every song is like a one-act play. And in a show tune, what you're doing is you're revealing the character, you're moving the story along, you know, in addition to having a great song, you know, having a ballad or a funny song. Sondheim did great work with Leonard Bernstein, with West Side Story, with Jewel Stein, with Gypsy. And then when he broke out on his own, he did a musical called Anyone Can Whistle with Arthur Lawrence, who wrote the book for Gypsy and West Side Story. And that was a big flop. It lasted like 10 or 16 performances or six or something, you know. And then he did The Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, which is probably one of his most popular shows. It has Comedy Tonight and Everybody Ought to Have a Maid, and a song called Calm, which is terrific. I should have put Calm on the list, which I play for my middle school students, and they love it. And then he wrote a musical called Company in 1970, which is groundbreaking in its own way. And if you can compare like popular music to Sondheim, Sondheim was like the Beatles in terms of, you know, there's the Beatles, there's what came before the Beatles and what came after the Beatles.
Right, right.
In a way. And that's sort of the way Sondheim was. Because his shows were so new, and they weren't critically accepted for a while. He's much more revered now than he was when he was when he started out.
You're listening to Troubadours and Rock on Tours with E.W. Conundrum Demure on WFTE Radio, Mount Cobb and Scranton, Pennsylvania. Community radio at its finest.
So in terms of musical theater, and then from, you know, there's him. There's before Sondheim and after Sondheim in a way. You know, there are other, you know, there are other strains, you know. It's not like a monolith.
Right.
But so he was a great innovator, and he was also unique, you know.
How so?
You can be like Sondheim, but Sondheim kind of stands out on his own for his shows. And I would say the quality of shows, the range. You know, like Funny Vamp of the Wet Forum was a farce based on ancient Roman farces. And Company was a very, very hip and cutting edge story at the time about a 35-year-old bachelor who couldn't commit and about marriage. And if you listen to the show, if you see the show, it's this complex, ambiguous statement about marriage, that just kind of reveals more and more depth as you go along. And it's such a range. So he goes from Company, and then he does a musical called Follies, which is about basically the part of the history of musical theater in a story. And then he has A Little Night Music, and then he has Sweeney Todd, which is about a murderous barber. Yeah.
So he's all over the place. He could do.
And it's because he was such a great collaborator and had such a curious mind that he could take on all these different subjects with all different book writers. His book writers were terrific. Yeah. And the book writer, and he's also called the librettist, he writes the story and the dialogue and creates the structure and, you know, and more. And then he works closely with the composer in creating the work. So one of the reasons that he had such a range is that he worked with different people at different times for different reasons.
So he's open and he to working with other people, and he likes to go to uncharted places and with other people, maybe even on occasion taking the lead to a certain extent, more so than you would think other big time established artists might.
Well, I don't know if it's more than the others, but yeah. What you just said about, you know, that was a great question, E.W. what you said is very true. He sought out interesting collaborators and a wide range of subjects. He had just a natural curiosity, and he loved being a collaborator. He was an only child, and he wasn't necessarily lonely because he likes being on his own, but it was like, you know, any kind of collaboration, like a theater, it's like a family, like a temporary family.
Right.
So he loved collaborating. And so he had, like, Arthur Lawrence would be older than him, kind of, you know. And then you had Larry Gelbart and Bert Shevlov, who Larry Gelbart was the creator of the TV show MASH, wonderful comedy writer. Then you had John Wideman, who wrote Assassins and Pacific Overtures. Pacific Overtures was about the opening of Japan in the 19th century. You know, your typical musical comedy subject.
Well, let me ask you this, though. I'm wondering, I mean, this is great information, and man, I got to take one of your classes. You know, I'm sure it's going to be intriguing. But I'm wondering, you know, do you notice common human themes that he falls into, or that he's wrestling with from one show to the next, even though there's so many different milieus that he's willing to delve into? Are there common human themes?
And they're basic themes too, in a way. People are trying to figure themselves out, you know, and they're dealing, when you take a show like Company, it's about sort of someone who won't commit. So it's about the joys of commitment and relationships, but also the drawbacks and the pain of relationships and intimacy, you know. And so I think that's a constant that everybody can see in their own lives.
Right.
So he's very much interested in people wanting to get together and wanting not to be together. He has a great song called "Marry Me a Little."
Yeah.
And it's in Company, and it was cut and it was added back. There's a song called there's a lyric called "Keep a tender distance, so we'll both be free." Mm-hmm. That's the way it ought to be.
Which tune is that?
That was in "Marry Me a Little." Mm-hmm. Yeah, and
I think we're going to hear that one, aren't we?
Yeah. And it's a great song, he's also interested in people how they're dealing with the past and their personal past. There's a song called "The Road You Didn't Take," which is, you know, the Robert Frost poem,
mm-hmm.
About two woods diverging in a yellow wood. And this middle-aged man is looking back on his life, and he's looking back on the choices that he didn't make. And he has a line, "The Ben I'll never be, who'll remember him?" He's regretting the life that he's regretting the life that he didn't lead in one sense, but he realizes kind of the inevitability of what happened, you know. Who's going to know who I might have been?
I think about that kind of stuff all the time. Do you think most people are going there and getting all of this when they see a show of Sondheim's, or are they just, "That's a great tune. I love the melody."
I don't know. You know, people get what they want from it and what they can. You know, the Scranton Shakespeare Festival did "Into the Woods," which is another one there's so many I forgot to mention. That he wrote with James Lapine, another great book writer who also wrote "Sunday in the Park" with George with him. So "Into the Woods" is about kind of what the kids would call a mashup. You know, it's about fairy tale stories that are all combined and intertwined. And when I saw it at the wonderful production at the Scranton Shakespeare Festival with a terrific cast, the baker's wife was excellent. They all were. But people who didn't see the show, they thought it was over at the first act, you know. Because what happens in the first act, everybody gets their wishes, and in the second act, you know, it's the results of what gets their wishes, and it's not really, you know, not always too happy. You had loads of people who had never seen it before because it was a free show, and I think they'll get the tunes, they'll get the laughter, and you know, and eventually, if they go back to us or if they think about us, they'll get the depth, you know.
So there's
from his lyrics, I think,
and that's one of the key aspects of Sondheim that makes him, again, one of the best, if not the best, at least iconic, and as you said, a reference point in American theater. His depth and his I guess dynamism, being able to go
and his range, and you know, and his insights into human nature, into the way people are, and not kind of preachy about it, although he thought that kind of art was teaching, not to not too preachy, but in a real kind of a great sympathy for how messed up we are. You know, like everybody, like Chekhov, you know, or Tennessee Williams, you know.
Right, exactly. Now, we only have a few moments left, Dr. Michael Pavese, our associate producer here for Troubadours and Rock On Tours, I'm proud to say, essayist, playwright, professor, middle school teacher, among other things. How do you want to wrap up this discussion about the great Stephen Sondheim?
Well, you know, you mentioned being open to collaboration and change, and he was open to changes right up until his death. And he would be, people would write him and ask him to do and ask about working on a show and revising. He'd be revising right up to the end, you know. But there was an article in the New York Times on Sunday, and it reproduced a lot of letters that he wrote because he was very generous with his time and his insights. He encouraged so many young theater people, but anybody who wrote him would get a response.
Wow.
Either a lengthy response and in fact, I have a letter from him. I wrote him right at the beginning of the pandemic, and he answered everybody in this kind of signature style. And if he saw a play, he was a huge playgoer, and if he saw a play or a performance or a musical that he liked, he would write to the writer and just say, I loved your work. And it was just such a huge boost, as you can imagine, from getting a note like that from this master.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of this article, which is written by Laura Collins Hughes, it's entitled Cherished Words from the Encourager in Chief. And at the end, she has this great quote, no single theater artist right now is as revered as he was. No one else can yet step into those shoes. We nonetheless could, artists and audience members alike, seek to borrow from his example by being adventurous, by being generous, by showing up. That would be one way to honor the giant. And I thought that was such a great quote and such a great idea. Showing up. Showing up.
I love it.
Suggested things for one another.
I love it.
Dr. Mike, what he did for us.
He showed up.
Well, you know, he lifted us up, and he still does.
Thank you so much, Doctor. We have to do this again. I think this was a great discussion, and there's so much more we can talk about. Dr. Michael Pavese on Stephen Sondheim, and all the songs you hear in today's episode are ones that he has chosen. We'll be hanging out together soon during the holidays, I'm sure. So until then, take care.
Well, thanks a lot, Larry. This is great. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure, sir.
Good talking.
Same here.
Bye.
Mademoiselles, you and me, pal. Second bottle, she looks for me. Bonnet flapping, yapping, woof, chicken, pastry. Yes, she looks for me. Good. Let her look for me. To tell me why she left me, as I always knew she would. I had thought she understood. They have never understood, and no reason that they should. But if anybody planning the sky. what you feel when voices that come through the window go until they distance and die, until there's nothing but sky, and how you're always turning back too late from the grass or the stick or the dog or the light or the kind of woman willing to wait, not the kind that you want to find waiting to return you to the night. Dizzy from the height, coming from the heart, studying the heart, entering the world of the hat, reaching through the world of the hat like a window, back to this one from that, studying a face, stepping back to look at a face, leaves a little space in the way, like a window, but to see, it's the only way to see. And when the woman that you wanted goes, you can say to yourself, well, I give what I give. But the woman who won't wait for you knows that however you live, there's a part of you always standing by, mapping out the sky, finishing a hat, starting on a hat, finishing a hat. Look, I made a hat.
In the epilogue to Look, I Made a Hat, the second volume of his collected lyrics, Stephen Sondheim writes, "Finally, I have a gift to offer every hat maker who has waded through these books. Read Phyllis McGinley's poem, Love Note to a Playwright. Not only is it a technical marvel, it's as important a piece of advice as you'll ever get. And if I listened to it the way I think every artist should, I wouldn't have written these books. I'd have written a couple of musicals instead." And here's the poem. It's about Richard Brinsley Sheridan, who was an 18th century Irish satirist, politician, playwright, and poet. Love Letter to a Playwright by Phyllis McGinley. Perhaps the literary man I most admire among my betters is Richard Brinsley Sheridan, who, viewing life as more than letters, persisted like a stubborn gale in not acknowledging his mail. They say he hardly ever penned a proper yours received and noted, but spent what time he had to spend shaping the law that England voted, or calling on his comic flute the tune for Captain Absolute. Though chief of the prodigious wits that Georgian taverns set to bubbling, he did not answer pleas remits or scoldings from his aunts in Dublin, or birthday messages, or half the notes that begged an autograph. I hear it sent his household wild, became a sort of parlor fable, the way that correspondence piled, mountainous, on his writing table, while he ignored the double ring and wouldn't answer anything. Not scrawls from friends, or screeds from foes, or scribble from the quibble lover, or chits beginning, I enclose manuscript under separate cover, or cards from people off on journeys, or formal statements from attorneys. The post came in, he let it lie. All this biographers agree on. Especially he did not reply to things that had RSVP on. Sometimes for months he dropped no lines to dear ones or sent valentines. But, polishing a second act, or coaxing kings to license freedom, let his epistles wait. In fact, they say he didn't even read them. The which, some mornings, seems to me a glorious blow for liberty. Brave Celt, although one must deplore his manners, and with reason ample, how bright from duty's other shore this moment seems his bold example. And would I owned an equal balance, his courage, and of course his talents, who, using up his mail to start an autumn fire or chink a crevice, cried, "Letters longer are than art, but vita is extremely brevis." Then choosing what was worth the candle, sat down and wrote The School for Scandal. Thank you for the hats, Mr. Sondheim. Goodbye for now.
The lute. Can you hear it? The glory in the coming of our hoard, board, where maximized potential has become untoward. It is better to stream through the stratosphere in tantalized fear of being seen not enough to have the choice to rebuff and reboot.
Marry me a little, love me just enough, cry but not too often, play but not too rough, keep a tender distance so we'll both be free. That's the way it ought to be. Marry me a little, do it with a will, make a few demands I'm able to fulfill. Want me first and foremost, not exclusively. That's the way it ought to be. I'm ready now. You can be my best friend, I can be your right arm.
not too deep, and we'll go not too far. We won't have to give up a thing, we'll stay who we are. Right, okay then, I am ready now. Won't someone
marry me a little, love me just enough, warm and sweet and easy, just the simple stuff. Keep a tender distance so we'll both be free. That's the way it ought to be. Marry me a little, body, heart and soul. Passionate as hell but always in control. Love me more than others, keep me company. That's the way it ought to be. I'm ready now, I'm ready now. Oh, how careful we'll be. Oh, how gently we'll tread. All the stings and ugly things we'll keep unsaid.
And there you have it, episode 450 of Troubadours and Raconteurs, with yours truly, E.W. Conundrum Demure. I'd like to thank those folks who made this episode possible. First and foremost, our associate producer and guest today, I'm happy to say, Dr. Michael Pavese. We'd like to thank Stephen Sondheim and writer Phyllis McKinley, as well as these musical artists: Thelonious Monk, Jason Robert Brown, Stephen Sondheim, Katrina Lenk, Celia Keenan Bolger, Colin Donnell, and Lin-Manuel Miranda, Raul Esparza, Melissa Arrico, Harry Nielsen, as well as Terrence Blanchard and Branford Marsalis, too. And of course, I'd like to thank you for listening. Until next time, let's give it a go and do our best with this time. Take care.